magic,
and the world of illusion.
Magic TV
and Craig Petty proudly present the Talk Magic Podcast. Every week we bring you awesome interviews with the greatest magicians that have ever lived. And now, here's your host, Craig Petty.
Hey guys, welcome back to Magic TV. My name's Craig, it's 9 o'clock, which means it's time for a Talk Magic, and I am pumped with who I've got on the channel today. I have been raving for the last probably 6 months now about how fantastic the 1914 are and how fantastic their releases are, and everybody knows Dee Christopher. But there are two people that are the driving force behind 1914. And if you've seen Distorted Visions, you'll know that the other half of that team is an incredible mentalist and also a really nice guy, having got to work with him. Super professional, absolutely wonderful, and doing a lot of really good things for magic. I am, of course, talking about Mr. 1914 himself, the one and only Jack Curtis. How you doing, mate?
Thank you. What a great introduction that was. Yes, very good. Thank you. I feel flattered.
True. It's true. I'm so glad that I've managed to get you on the channel. I should tell anyone, the only reason you're so busy, like you guys over at 1914 are so busy, and I know the stuff that you do outside of that as well. I think the only reason I managed to tie you down is you're kind of isolating at the moment, having come back into the country. So I've managed to get you in a week period where you're not running around everywhere. So
yeah. So I'm a prisoner in my own home, basically. No, I came back from Spain a few days ago, and so I'm here for the next week.
Fair enough. So at least we benefit from that. But yeah, I mean, I imagine that I want to talk about your whole career and I'm talking about everything that you've done, but I imagine there's going to be a lot of people that are watching this channel that might not have heard of you before. Because when it comes to the 1914, you're very much the behind the scenes guy that makes it happen. But having now worked with you and Dee on an actual project, like just seeing how passionate you are about what it is that you guys do is absolutely mind blowing. So, I say, a lot of people aren't going to know who you are. And that's why I wanted to do this interview, because I want everyone to know who you are, because I think that you're doing so many good things for magic. But you've been involved in, I mean, obviously, you know, I'm talking about you as a producer and somebody who produces, but I mean, I know from watching your Distorted Visions project that you are an incredible performer as well. So can we start from the very beginning and talk about maybe your journey into magic and how that all came about? Would that be okay, Jack?
Yeah, sure. No problem. So
yeah, what's your origin story?
So it was when I was probably 13 years old, really. Well, maybe a little bit before. No, I'll tell you what it was a lot younger than that, actually. So maybe like 7 or 8 years old. My granddad, he knew a few tricks. He was not a magician, but he knew a few tricks, and he taught me a few tricks when I was a kid. And I showed my mates at 7 or 8 years old in the playground, and they loved them. Didn't really pursue it much more, but I always, you know, had that. That was what hooked me, really. Then what really propelled my passion for it further was when I was 13, I was an actor in a daytime television soap opera called Crossroads. And
I remember Crossroads.
Yeah. It was set your neck of the woods, wasn't it?
Yeah, set in the Midlands. Benny, the guy with the cap.
Yeah, so that was the original Crossroads, which I was too young to remember, really. Then they revived it early 2000s, and it ran for a couple of years. I don't think it was particularly well received. However, I was an actor. I played a young kid in that. And I got to miss loads of time off school, and it was brilliant. And it was during that where there's lots of waiting. When you're making TV shows, there's a lot of waiting around. And I had a tutor on set. There was a few kids my age who were in it, and we had a tutor on set. And then when we weren't doing schooling, we got to hang around with the rest of the cast in the green room, etc. And I think I just remember one day someone was doing some card tricks, you know, very basic tricks. And I'd remembered a few, you know, from what my granddad had taught me. And I started doing those and they got really good reactions. And I thought, oh, I could get used to this. And so then I dug out some books and then sort of became hooked from there, really. And I kind of became known on set as, oh, this little kid that does magic. And yeah, I really liked it. And then I took that outside of the studio and you know, my friends loved it at school. And then, yeah, it just became my thing, really. I was known as the kid that did magic. And so it was mainly card tricks, really, bit of coin stuff, but not much. I didn't really get into mentalism as such until late teens. But early teens, yeah, I was trying to digest as much information as I could, mainly through books at the time. Few VHSs, which slowly transitioned into. I think I was on the end of the VHSs, mm-hmm. just as DVDs were becoming more of a thing. But I had a few VHS. My first VHS I remember was Daryl's Ambitious Card.
Classic.
Yeah, that was great, and that's what really got me into it. That actually. So that's, yeah, a brief breakdown of how I got into it. But yeah, it was through waiting around in a green room, basically, when I was a child actor.
So here's a couple of questions based off the back of that. Hmm. Did you continue with acting when Crossroads came to an end, or did you not pursue that line of work?
Yeah, good question. Yeah, I mean, it's still something that I have an interest in. So what happened was I was in quite a lot of... I was in quite a lot of TV programs and things like that when I was a kid. And then as I got older, I basically lost the cuteness and people were less interested in me. Is I think the brutal honesty. But I know I'm still very much have an affiliation with it. And most of my friends today are actors who've been through that journey with me. I was very privileged to be a part of a drama group in Nottingham, where I'm from, called the Television Workshop, which was at the time completely free. It was funded by ITV and acted as a casting pool for television programs and films, commercials, etc. If they needed any young people between the ages, started at 7 and ran all the way through to 21, and I was in this group from age 11 through to 21, and it shaped me really into who I am now. And I guess as time went on and I wasn't getting as many parts, it didn't really faze me too much, because I actually became a lot more interested in the other side of the camera, which is now what I do today. So it all ties in together.
Okay. And before we talk about the sort of the video production side of things, you said that you got into mentalism at the age of 17. People know you as a performer and as a creator for a lot of your mentalism. What was the catalyst for moving from magic to mentalism and kind of taking that jump into wanting to do more mentalism?
I think I just... I mixed magic and mentalism. And then I guess I just started gravitating more towards mentalism, really. I don't think there was a clear cutoff point. It just became apparent to me that I don't know what it was. I remember now. So I was, it was when I was 18, I think it was. So I went to university to study film production. I didn't last very long. It just wasn't for me. University, that is, the filmmaking, yes, but the university, not so much. I actually dropped out of my first year, but I had this little limbo period where I was still paying for the accommodation, but wasn't going to any lectures. So I had quite a lot of free time on my hands. And I thought, well, there's no better time to try and put this energy into a show. And so I was formulating a stage show, and it was through rehearsing that, which had some magic in, by the way, but it was mainly mentalism. And I just thought it didn't really feel right. I think it was, there was more mentalism, and I thought, well, maybe does the magic dilute that a bit? I don't know. So I made the artistic decision really for that show to not have any magic. I mean, it's all, you know, part and parcel of the same thing, but you know what I mean. So so I did this show, which was all mentalism, and then I loved it really. And from that point onwards, I didn't really do much. I mean, I still do, you know, as a little hobby here and there. But professionally then I considered myself a mentalist from that point onwards, I think.
Okay. And what made you decide to move into video production? Because you've been acting, you've acted since you were a child, you've been interested in magic as a child, you've now progressed into sort of really being fascinated about mentalism. You talked about how you went and did video production in university. And although that didn't pan out, there must have been a point where you went, you know what, I like the idea of being behind the other side of the camera, else you wouldn't have even gone down the route of going to university in the first place.
Yeah.
How did that all come about?
Well, again, it was through this drama group that I was a part of. And although that was its primary focus, it very much encouraged all aspects of the industry, really. And it became apparent to the people that ran the workshop that I had, what it was as well, it was back in the Crossroads days. So I was a kid and I had a job. So I was making money as a 13-year-old kid, good money. So I was interested in filmmaking on a sort of hobby kind of level, because my dad had a camcorder and I was making some like silly videos with my mates with this camcorder. And then the first like thing I bought with the money that I was making from the TV show was a digital mini DV camera. This was like an analog one that my dad had, you know, from, you know, way back, probably the late 80s it had been around. But now I got myself a digital one, and that was what it was, messing around with my mates. It was the time of Jackass. Remember Jackass, doing stupid stuff. And me and my mates, we fancied ourselves as, you know, a bit Jackass-esque, and we just, that's what we did. After school, I'd get my camera and would film stupid stunts. And it was very painful half the time. And then, I had an iMac at home, you know, one of the old school iMacs, you know, the big, like fruity coloured ones. Mm-hmm. And it had like the first ever version of iMovie on it. So I was editing this like silly Jackass stuff with my mates. And I was getting the hang of it, and I was quite good at it. And it was that, really, again, just mucking around. And then that paved the way for more.
Okay, that's really cool. So you went to university, that didn't pan out after the year, but you're now at a point where you know you love video production, but you didn't want to go to university to do it. You also know that you love mentalism, and you've put together this show while you were kind of sitting around. What happened then? Because obviously we know you as a video producer. I'll be honest, I don't know if you ever went full-time as a mentalist. I know you have the ability to, but I don't know if you actually have or not. So where did the net, because you're in a bit of a limbo at this point in your in this whole sort of story. What happened next?
So I was doing a lot of mentalism gigs, doing a lot of gigs. And I would never say that I was fully professional, because it wasn't my full-time thing, but definitely semi-professional. I was doing a lot of gigs at one point, and I was also doing filmmaking as well. So they were separate, but then brought together, I guess, when D&I first started the 1914. So the 1914 actually first came about 10 years ago.
Yeah, I mean,
so that was when I was in my early 20s, and then it was a hobby, I guess. We didn't really know what we were doing.
Well, yeah. Hang on. I don't want to gloss over this because this is really just because a lot of people are going to think of the 1914 as a company that's only been formed in the last 6 months. And I remember sitting down on the sofa 10 years ago with David Penn interviewing Louis Lavelle when he brought out a product with the 1914. But it's obviously not been around for the last 10 years. So I suppose the question is, how did you meet Dee? And how did the 1914 come about the first time round?
Okay, so how did I meet Dee? Well, Dee, I'm from Nottingham. Dee was living in Nottingham at the time. And I believe we actually started chatting on MySpace, if you remember MySpace. and yeah, there was this new, I'd come across this magician on MySpace from Nottingham, my turf. I'm thinking, who's this guy? anyway, got chatting and we met up for a beer and got on. And it was from then really. And stayed in touch. And I, when he had, he did a few gigs that I helped out with and vice versa. And then Dee came to, obviously, you know, he knew I was a video guy. And then he came to me with the idea of maybe starting a sort of video production company doing magic, and seemed like the obvious fusion of two things that I do and I'm good at. So that's how 1914 came about. And we didn't really know what we were doing. Dee had some contacts, like distributors and stuff, and we just kind of were winging it basically.
But I mean, some of the output of the 1914 back in those days, there was some incredible stuff that was coming out.
Yeah, well,
Lewis's stuff, Your Distorted Visions came out back then, didn't it? And
That was a little bit, I think that was the last, Distorted Visions was the last thing we put out before it just kind of fizzled out into nothing. Well, what happened was, well, I'll go back. So yeah, the first release we did was Louis Lavelle's, it was called Paint the Roses Red, which was a compilation.
And I'm telling you right now, I've done it on the channel, the best trick of all time is harmony.
And it's the best explanation of any magic DVD that I've ever seen. Basically, if you've not seen it, the explanation goes something along the lines of, I don't know how it works, it just does. Paint the Roses Red. We were quite lucky really, because nobody at that point, Lewis wasn't the name that he is now, and so we kind of, I don't like to take credit for that, and also Fraser Parker as well when we did True Mysteries.
Yeah, that was great as well, actually. Yeah, I forgot about that. Some great stuff that came out. And you were putting your stuff out through Murphy's. It was getting rave reviews. I remember giving Paint the Roses Red 100% on the Wizard Product Review back on the day. Like, everything was flying high for the 1914. You were making a name for yourself. Then all of a sudden, gone. You guys disappeared. I mean, it was like a boy band splitting up.
The thing is, Craig, it wasn't really, back then, it wasn't really a sustainable business. I think our output was probably like two DVDs a year. So it really was just a hobby, really, a glorified hobby. The feedback was great, obviously. But because we were both doing different things, you know, Dee at the time was doing gigging, a lot of gigging as well, which was a focus for him, and a lot of development work for what then became Killer Magic with BBC that he was doing back then. And so, and I had my stuff going on as well, again, gigging at the time, but mainly film stuff and other creative ventures. I even dipped my toe in running a record label as well, started a record label with another friend. So I had loads of little things going on. It sounds bizarre, but yeah, no, I've tried my hat at lots of things over the years, and it was kind of that period, you know, where we were still sort of finding our feet and where we belong in the world as a whole. But then what happened was, so I did Distorted Visions, then I got a job working in Australia. That's really what was the nail in the coffin, because I was no longer in the country. And so I went to work at a film school over in Australia, which was brilliant. So I worked there. So I was in Australia for about a year, and then came back. So that was probably about 2015, 2016. So about 5-6 years ago. And kept in touch with Dee, you know, still mates. But then it wasn't until the pandemic hit, really. So last summer, I had a catch up with Dee on the phone.
And obviously, just to fill people in that haven't seen Dee's interview, in the time that you and Dee weren't working together on the 1914, Dee had spent a lot of time working with Penguin Magic.
That's right, yeah.
So he's obviously had a lot more experience of working with a big company that produces a heck of a lot of content. So that's got to have been quite useful from an experiential point of view.
Yeah, definitely. And that's what Dee was doing. He was doing a lot of film. Well, so Dee basically sort of divided and taught himself how to film, taught himself how to edit, and he was doing that on behalf of Penguin. But then, the pandemic hit, and then, the whole world became uncertain. And then Penguin Magic at the time couldn't guarantee him the output that he was used to, so he had to think of how we can continue making a living. And so he just posed the question to me, just said, what do you think about bringing the 1914 back? And I said, yeah. so
but just to be clear here, you guys decided to restart a company producing magic tricks in the middle of a pandemic.
Yeah.
Whoa. I mean, it panned out, but bloody hell, Jack, that's a bit of a risk, isn't it? I mean...
Yeah, wow. I guess it's a bit of a gamble. Didn't really see it like that, to be honest, but...
awesome. No, I've got so much respect for you. I love it. That's such an entrepreneurial kind of thing to do. Like, yeah, let's do it. Yeah. What does this make possible?
But this time around, we've done it a lot more properly. It's not no longer the little hobby ad hoc... 2 DVDs a year. We're trying to continue the output, more consistent output this time. I mean, we've had a lot of setbacks, all mainly pandemic related, mainly blooming filming tail end of last year. We'd book a venue, have some spectators ready for the performances, and then the venue would pull out, or then the government restrictions would change. Oh, there was a lot of going around in circles, but we got there. I think we were originally aiming to launch at the end of last year, but because of these setbacks, we kept having to put it back. So we ended up launching mid-February. And so what's that now? February, March, April, May, June. So we've been going for 5 months now.
But in those 5 months, you've set the world on fire. And I'm not just saying that because I'm sitting here reviewing products all of the time. And I've reviewed at this point every single product that 1914 has put out. And they're all incredible. There's always a big buzz about your stuff. Everybody always talks about the Shadow Wallet, which was one of your launch items, just blew up. Everybody was talking about the Shadow Wallet. But then everything that you've bought out since then, there's always a big buzz around a 1914 product. And why is that? Like, why is it that makes a 1914 product so kind of, I don't know what the word is, so everyone's talking about it, such a buzz about it. Is that a thing that you aim to do? I'm assuming that you do. And, what process do you go through to make sure that, the output's really strong, which it is?
Well, of course, that's we want our products to be viewed like that, and it's been really humbling actually listening to the reviews and the reviews that come into the website as well. My girlfriend's one of her hobbies, she just loves reading reviews. That's any reviews, Zoe. She's hilarious. She loves reading reviews, and she keeps saying to me, like, she thinks you're gonna have to get some bad reviews on your website because people are gonna start thinking these are all fake. And it does feel a little bit like that, but they are all genuine, and we haven't like filtered out the bad reviews, so that's really, really humbling. And one thing that Dee and I have agreed on, way back, was we don't really want to put out anything that we know is mediocre. That's it, ultimately. I mean, it doesn't sit comfortably with me knowing that a product is subpar. And of course, you know, products are subjective. What one magician might love, another one might hate. But ultimately, what we want to deliver is quality products that people are going to use. And I remember when I was a kid as well, I remember buying magic, as I probably you remember, buying magic like out of a catalogue, right? Before the internet was the crazy thing that it is today. And you'd read a product description, and well, you get this all the time, of course, you know, you review every trick under the sun. And yeah, I just remember being so disappointed sometimes because of a misleading ad copy. Or and when you're a kid as well, and you don't have that much money anyway, it's like, what a waste. You just think, what a waste of money. And when you're learning as well, you kind of want to consume everything. So you have a small amount of money that you could put on something, and sometimes it pays off and you think, oh, that was well worth it. But when you don't get that, and you don't get that satisfaction, and you think, oh, I wish I'd bought that instead, and I've got to wait until I can make that money to buy this again. And I just thought, I've kind of got my past self in me that I feel that disappointment, and I don't want other people to feel that. And obviously, you know, that's an impossible task, because, as I said, you know, it's of the subjective nature of it. However, that's the driving force for me. Like, I only want to put out stuff that I know is very good, even if it's something I might not perform. So for me and my style, I wouldn't perform personally Alan Rorison's Prohibition Monty, for example. Wouldn't be my style. However, I know that's a bloody good effect. And so, yeah, that's my sort of ethos and philosophy about putting. I know that that's echoed with by D, and we do a lot of work with Lewis as well, and I know that he feels the same. And yeah, I think that's probably what's going to keep people coming back. I think just knowing that you're going to get solid products from us.
Sure. But I think one of the things beyond the products, and one of the things that I've experienced this firsthand, is your production quality. And I've full on ranted on this channel for months now about how production quality is terrible. And you see some tricks that come out and it's basically an iPhone on someone's kitchen table. I saw a download the other day, and it was filmed on someone's kitchen table, and they still had the dirty pots and pans on the table. They're doing card tricks. I'm like, I you always look for the perfect location, and you pay to get the perfect location for every product. Like when you did the Prohibition Monty, it was in a little bar, and I remember Dee telling the story about how you did the Revelations project in caves, and you went into some underground caves. And I don't know if this is true or not, but I also heard a rumor that, like, you filmed the Stagecraft project and then just scrapped all the footage and redid it again, just because you wanted to actually do it on a proper stage, and you hired a theater. Even my product that I did with you, you got me to Nottingham, and you'd hired that venue, which was absolutely perfect for what we were doing. And, you know, you see a lot of production companies, even big production companies these days, ones that I work with, and they'll literally just sit down at a table and go, yeah, do whatever you want. It's fine. Yeah, we'll roll the camera. You just go. It's cool. You really spend a lot of time thinking of that product. Does that come about because of your background as a video producer and a desire to want to have a product that you can be happy about, not just from a sort of the quality of the actual trick, but also the quality of the product? Why have you put so much effort into the products that you bring out? And I think it's a good thing, but is there a reason why you went down that route?
Yeah, I think you want to be, well, you give an example of a guy doing it in his, you know, bedroom or whatever with his dirty laundry behind. And I just think if you believe in a product and you want it to be the best it can be, then why wouldn't you? But you put in that extra effort. It shows commitment to what you're putting out. It shows you believe in what you're putting out, which is absolutely what we do. And yeah, where possible, we'd like to, if budget and resources allow, we'd love to shoot everything in like interesting locations. You know, we have to make compromises sometimes, and not every effect that we do or every release that we do is going to be set in an amazing location. Some of them, you know, we have to go, you know what, we've got this deadline, we've got to do it by then. You know, through deadline constraints or whatever, you pick a, you know, we'll go with this. You know, but as long as it looks professional, I think, yeah. And I think it definitely, the setting helps to increase the production value. For sure.
That's fantastic. And the people that are watching this, if they want to release a product with the 1914, how do they get on your and D's radar? Is there a way that people can kind of say, hey, I've got this trick? Because I always thought of the 1914 as a mentalism company, because obviously you have a background in mentalism, D has a background in mentalism, and Lewis is a mentalist as well. And then you see some of the products you bought out. But that's not the case. I mean, you look at Prohibition Monty, that's not a mentalism trick at all. Like, how can people that are watching this get on the 1940s radar? And is there a particular style or type of trick that they need to bring to your attention in order to stand a chance of ultimately working with you?
Simply email us. So you can email us at magic@the1914.com. We would prefer videos to be sent, so private link on YouTube or Vimeo, doesn't have to be shot well, just on your phone will suffice. I think we don't really have a certain type of trick that would favour, because we're still a young company and we're still finding our feet. We've got some things coming out in the future which may surprise some people. Whether or not it's a brand fit, it might be, it might not be. Like I say, we're still finding our feet, and so the success of some of these future products will probably inform where we go from here in the future, artistically. But yeah, no, just send it over. Even if you think, oh, it doesn't really feel like a 1914 project, I don't know, it might surprise you. If it's good and we like it, we'll make it.
That's great. That's awesome. And one of the products that you've brought out, which is probably my favorite 1914 product, is the Art of Stagecraft. Mm. I love that kind of deep dive into how to perform on stage. And I've not seen any other production companies doing anything like that. And it feels like that's kind of your style and works. It was so great. I mean, I watched it probably 5 or 6 times. I thought it was fantastic. Are you planning on doing anything else like that? Because you are, as far as I'm aware, probably the only company that's producing content like that. Is there, are you going to be doing other things that are kind of, I did hear a rumor that there's going to be more art of projects in the future. Can you give us a sneak peek, or give us a kind of you don't have to tip anything that you're not ready to tip, but what's your plans with that format? Because it is so unique.
Yeah, and that's the thing that myself, Dee, and Lewis, I think that's what we love the most and want to do more of them. So yes, we absolutely have plans to do more of those. And going back to Alex's thing, the Art of Stagecraft, and, you know, myself, as you've learned today, with a history of acting, and certainly, you know, I've done lots of stuff on stage, mentalism, magic, and acting. You know, that's my bag. Like, I really, really enjoyed that. So yeah, it was, because I sat down to edit the first version of that, and then I was like, yeah, we've missed a trick here. That's why, you know, what you're saying earlier about we then decided, nah, we need to film this in a proper theater, and so we binned it. We binned the first lot, and it was absolutely the right decision to do. I digress. So yeah, I want to definitely do some more of those ones, but they're big ones, so they a lot of time, a lot of planning, and a lot of work goes into them. And just because of the economics of everything, you know, single effect tricks sell more. That's the sad reality. I say sad reality, it's not a sad reality, it's still a cool reality because we're putting out cool tricks. Although, you know, if we could do just projects like the Art of Stagecraft, then I'd just do those all day long, because that's what gets me going, for sure. But yeah, no, we definitely plan to do some more of that kind, masterclasses, I suppose, that aren't necessarily teaching any tricks at all, but speaking quite candidly about certain areas of the craft that could be extremely useful for people wanting to further their career in different aspects. So in this particular one with Alexander Marsh was the art of stagecraft. And so we'd love to do all kinds of masterclasses, such as like possibly the art of comedy with the correct person to present that, that kind of thing. We haven't got anything confirmed, but there's lots of talk about a few bits and bobs. And I know you've spoken to Dee a lot about this.
Oh yeah, just because I'm so passionate about that. I think it's such, it's something that, one of the reasons why I've been so vocal about my support with 1914 is because you are approaching stuff within the magic community the way that I've been campaigning for stuff to be approached for ages. Like, I'm sick to death of the kid in the bedroom with the iPhone, with the shaky camera. It's just, I've had enough of it. So it's nice that a company's coming along, and that's why I love you guys so much. I really do.
Well, also as well, you have to remember that a camera is just a tool. So iPhones are very good cameras. I wouldn't diss iPhones just because they're not like a big professional recorder at all. But I hear you though. If it's just in your bedroom, it's like, come on, at least take your iPhone and at least tidy your room is the message there. When we started the 1914, our ethos at the beginning, and still is, was to make you a better magician. And you can know all the tricks in the world, it doesn't make you necessarily a good magician. Gives you an amazing head start, but there's so many other facets, as you know, to being a performer. Certainly, and that can be anything from, you know, how to get a gig in the first place. That's amazing information that nobody really speaks about, from getting the gig to rehearsing the gigs, to performing them, marketing them, all sorts, and writing as well. I think that's an important one. That's why I quite like to maybe do that at some point, sort of the art of writing magic, I suppose.
Sort of scripting and that side of things.
Yeah, scripting, because that's what I do personally. So it was really interesting actually doing the art of stagecraft with Alex, because there's a whole section, or a few sections actually dedicated to scripting. And him and I do things completely differently. That's not to say one's better than the other. There is no right or wrong answer. His way works for him, my way works for me. So he was very against writing a full script. Whereas I love that. I like to write a full script because Alex said it sort of traps him sometimes, because you're trying to, rather than being in the moment, you're trying thinking about, oh, what's the next words that I'm supposed to say, that kind of thing. Whereas I find it actually nice to be thinking about the next words I've got to say. It allows me to still ad-lib, but it gives me something to put me back on track. But because I'm a filmmaker as well, and because I do a lot of writing anyway, like writing dialogue, like narrative scripts, so it comes natural to me anyway. So I actually write my if I'm coming up with an effect, and you know, pre the rehearsal process, I'll open up a script editor, like a movie script writing software, and I will write almost like a scene, actually. But that's how I personally do it. But again, you know, these are really interesting things that people might want to know more about. So writing, I think, would be a good one, a sort of art of. Anyway, we've got so many possibilities with the art of. And for people that don't know, by the way, I keep saying, or we keep saying, the art of. So what I'm referring to is the art of stagecraft. It was like a masterclass about how to perform and become a stage performer. So we were thinking about doing a series. So the art of fill in the blank, the art of performing comedy, the art of rehearsing, I don't know, the art of face paint, whatever, you know, but something that, you know, we think that an in-depth discussion, an in-depth snapshot into how professionals come up with and present their work.
That's great. That's fantastic. And I'm really looking forward to more that you do with that. Can you give us, before we move off of 1914, can you give us any sneak peeks of stuff that's coming out in the future? Because I've heard you've got like dozens of stuff that you're in various different phases of production. I know that as of time of writing, we've got the, is it the Providence deck?
Yeah.
Which is incredible. I have a Providence deck. I have been lucky enough to be sent one.
Yeah, I've actually got mine right here.
They're amazing quality. I rang D up and I was like,
yeah, nice.
I need a brick of these. Look at them. They're beautiful. I love them. Absolutely. And the box is incredible as well. They're just...
Yeah, nice.
Look at that.
Ooh.
That's so good. So they're coming out soon.
Yeah, very soon. So probably within the next few weeks, they'll be out. What are we now? July. Certainly by August, I'm hoping. So yeah, we've got that coming out. That's what people are most excited about because we teased it on the website when we launched. So we've just been inundated with messages going, when are these cards coming out? When are these cards coming out? When are these cards coming out? So yeah, soon is the answer. What else have we got coming out soon? We've got an ESP deck coming out soon.
Right.
With a very, very clever marking system. What else have we got coming out soon?
Tarot card, I believe, is coming out.
Ah, of course. Yeah, in fact, actually, that's literally the next thing that's coming out, like probably next week. In fact, yes, it's coming out next week. So it's called Thy Will Be Done. And it's another effect by Alexander Marsh, the same guy that did The Art of Stagecraft.
And Cocktail he did as well on your site as well, didn't he?
Say again?
He did Cocktail as well on your...
Of course, yeah, Cocktail. So, yeah, so Alex is great. He comes up with he's just a very good mentalist, a professional performer with literally thousands of shows under his belt, which is why I think The Art of Stagecraft was so good, because it was coming from years and years of experience. So anyway, so Alexander Marsh, yeah, an effect called Thy Will Be Done. And it's basically a single tarot card, but it's a single tarot card which will predict some actions of your spectators using borrowed objects. Really, really, it's literally just a tarot card which will fit in your wallet so you can take it anywhere. You can perform a miracle at a moment's notice. That's great. Lewis Laval absolutely loved it because he's massively into his tarot. And what actually happened was, because for those that don't know, Lewis is a great mentalist, but he's also a bit of a soundy as well. And so he actually helps record the sound for a lot of the 1914 stuff and does a lot of sound mixing for us and also creates a lot of the music. In fact, every video that we've put out has all been original music, and it's all been by Lewis Laval, so he makes the music for us. And so we rocked up at the studio to film the live performance of Thy Will Be Done, and we had a cancellation from the spectators, so we were left in a position where we had no one to perform to, but Lewis hadn't actually seen the effect. So we're like, oh, we'll just use Lewis then. So so when you see it on the trailer, you see it's Lewis Laval that Alex performs to, but it is genuinely the first time that Lewis has seen the effect. And Lewis, being the modern mystic that he is, he loves tarot anyway, so he was blown away by it. So yeah, that's gone straight into Lewis's wallet, so he carries that around in his shadow wallet as well. So yeah, that's coming out next week. Thy Will Be Done.
Wow, so you've got a lot of stuff. It'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about one particular project. At the beginning of this year, somebody asked me a question on this channel, and they said, what is, in your opinion, the best trick of 2021 out of what you've seen? And I said, I gave a very vague thing, and I said, there's something coming out with 1914 involving a Zippo lighter, which is absolutely the best trick I've ever seen, ever. And I wish I'd never said that, because for the last 6 months, every single day I get a message or a comment on YouTube going, can you tell us more about the Zippo lighter trick that is the best trick of 2021? Is it coming out this year? You don't have to say anything about it or who it's from. I know you guys keep things very close to your chest, but is it coming out eventually?
Yes. Yes, it's a good one. It's a good one. We're all very excited for it. The only thing that's held it, the holdup basically, is just to do with manufacturing. So it's been a bit of a nightmare getting it manufactured. But it is, the wheels are in motion and it will come out. And I think, yeah, people are going to love it. It's a good one.
It's the perfect everyday carry trick. And I know I'll be getting one.
Definitely. So. Especially if you smoke. You carry a lighter with you anyway. Yeah, perfect. Yeah, I think it's going to be a good one.
Mm, absolutely. Now, I want to ask you one more question, which is, aside from the 1914, you're very busy doing everything that you do with the 1914, and obviously you're still doing stuff outside of that as well, video production wise and acting and so on and so forth. Do you still have time to perform yourself?
You know what? Very, very little. It's a constant battle with me, because I'm like, I'm surrounded by magic and I just want to do it, but then I'm being pulled in all these different directions. The answer to your question is I barely have any time, sadly, but I have a goal though, and my goal is to get really back into the swing of things before Blackpool next year, because we're going to have a stand at Blackpool, and I want to be in a position where I can happily demo all of the effects that we do. And to be honest with you, yes, I'm quite rusty at the minute, but all that will change. So yeah, it's just life. Life goes through cycles, and I haven't been in a performing cycle for a good while, but I'm dying to pick that up again, for sure.
Awesome. And two questions on that. The first question is, you've obviously just re-released Distorted Visions, mm-hmm. which was very understated by 1914 standards. Normally when something comes out, it's like, it's here, and like you shout it from the rooftops and everyone's talking about it. This kind of got snuck onto the website, and I think there were a couple of Instagram posts about it, but beyond that, there wasn't really that much. So obviously I'm going to be reviewing it and telling people how great it is, but is there a reason why you didn't shout about it from the rooftops? Because the material is amazing. And let's be honest, it's about a decade old. So most people
That's why it was a decade old. So,
but it's as good now. It's not like there's anything that's aged. It's as good.
No. Well, thank you. That's a massive compliment. Lewis loved it as well. And he'd never, despite him being, around where, at that, at 1914 1.0, even Lewis hadn't seen it, and he was got great compliments from him as well. So I think that's a lot of people are in your shoes, that they haven't come across it before. Well, I guess I think it was just we wanted to give people the means to still access it, although because it's not like a brand new thing, and we didn't want our audience to think, oh, it's because we brought out, we re-released True Mysteries like 2 weeks before. And I guess what we don't want is people to just think, oh, they've got nothing new, these guys, they're just putting out all this old stuff. I guess that's the reason we didn't want to shout about it, because it was already shouted about, 10 years ago. But I'm super pleased that it has reached more people that never got to the first time around. People like yourself, like Lewis, and there's countless others now. So
your blank card routine's gone straight into my working set. Like, it's amazing.
Nice.
Just incredible. For those people that haven't seen Distorted Visions, can you very quickly synopsisize what it is and the type of material on there and who it'd be suitable for?
Yeah, sure. So it's six easy to do real workers, mentalism effects, which genuinely every single one of those I did really regularly at my gigs. Some of them I took from, because I wrote a book maybe 2 years before that came out called Distorted Thoughts. And it was almost like the DVD version of that. Although I think there was I took three effects from the book and added three extra ones as well. So there were some effects that weren't in the book that were in the DVD, and there's some in the DVD that weren't in the book. But between those two, Distorted Thoughts, the book, and Distorted Visions, were sort of like a good snapshot into me and this kind of stuff that I perform and still do perform when I get the chance. Then I guess they're easy. They're really easy. That's the thing. We were talking about how I transitioned to mentalism a little earlier on, and that was another thing. I realized that I'd spent the last 5 or 6 years previous to becoming a mentalist trying to master really hard things, which are impressive to magicians, but to lay people, they don't know that you've spent the last 10 years mastering this move. So I guess I'm not for a second saying that mentalism is any easier than magic. I'm not. I just found this nice sort of this nice equilibrium of. I found a philosophy of never doing anything that's difficult. and I think the Distorted Visions is the epitome of getting amazing reactions from cool ideas that really aren't difficult. And I think we as magicians on the whole, underestimate sometimes the power that really simple things, and I'm not trying to trivialize the content on the DVD at all. It's basically they're really cool effects that that give you so much opportunity to perform. Basically all the dirty work is done, and it leaves you the chance to focus on the performances. Is my way of promoting the release. But yeah, Distorted Visions. Yeah, I'm super proud of every single effect on there, and every single effect is great. And I'm saying this, 8 years later, so they're all solid. Yeah,
they are. I mean, you can just tell that every single trick has been thought out to the nth degree and performed.
Oh yeah, big time. And that's what I do. It's just what I do. Like, I'm not happy performing an effect that I haven't really thought about every little justification for every little move, and if I haven't got a justification for that, I need to think of it. And anyway, it's all there. There's nothing in there, I don't think, anyway, that people would challenge in the way of justification and everything. And again, I performed every single one of those effects hundreds of times in the times when I was gigging back then. So yeah, they really were refined and sharpened through all of those performances. Yeah.
And would you ever consider doing another project?
Myself, a Jack Curtis project?
Yeah.
Of course, I would never rule that out. In fact, I'd love to, actually. But it would require me to get back in. Like, what I don't want to be one of those magicians that thinks, oh, I'm a bit skint this month, I need a bit of money, I'll come up with something just to put it out and to make a quick buck. I've never done that, and I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't feel comfortable doing that. So I know that if I was to put out anything in the future, then it would be definitely something that I've, really worked my ass off to perfect.
That's great. That's awesome. And you mentioned briefly that you talked about Blackpool 2022, assuming that Blackpool next year is going on, which
very true, who knows?
Everyone's assuming that it is, so being a positive guy, I'm going to assume it's going to be as well.
Yeah, same.
1914 are going to have a stand, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. I've heard that you're going to go big with the stand. Like, is it? Are we going to be taking over the Winter Gardens here? Is somebody finally going to challenge Vanishing Ink in their Bounty Castle, is what I want to know. Because they've had the biggest stand for years there, but I know that you guys at the 1914, you kind of go big or you go home. So
Very true. Although I mean, we've booked a table there. That's about as far as it's gone right now. So while I'd love to say yes, be there, it was going to be the best amazing stand you've ever seen, that's literally as far as we've got, Craig. But please do come down and please do see us where we are there, because we're definitely going to be releasing some good stuff for Blackpool, for sure.
That's amazing. That's fantastic. And I want to ask you two more questions before we wrap this whole thing up. The first question is, as somebody who has worked with so many creators over the last decade and seen so many people come and you've helped them, you know, improve their products and bring it to market, and somebody who's done that yourself with your own project, is there any advice you can give to magicians and mentalists that are watching this that are wanting to be more creative? Maybe their ultimate goal is to create their own magic trick, or maybe it's just that they want to make their own magic that they do for their spectators more unique to them so that not everyone else is doing it. Whatever the reason, is there any advice on how to be creative?
Just do it, really. It's as simple as that. I think a lot of times, and I'm guilty of this as well, and most creatives are, and that is you get in your own head and then you begin to think, oh, you know, are people going to like this? And then you begin doubting it, and you think, you know, before long you've convinced yourself not to do it. So as long as you can push through that, I would say, yeah, just do it. Life's too short, man, because, you know, if you've got that great idea, put it out, or at least go through the motions of developing it, to put it out. And I don't mean necessarily a magic trick. It might be you wanted to perform on stage for the first time, or maybe you're writing, you want to come up with some better scripting. Just do it would be my advice. And, you know, you hear people talk about writer's block, and I think I have experienced what people mean when they say writer's block, but I think really even writer's block's just an excuse. You just need to overpower it, and you know, stop making excuses basically, and then you find, or certainly I find, it's really hard. And so recently I've been writing more scripts, not magic scripts, these are like narrative like films. I've been writing a lot of scripts recently, and you always sit down at the beginning and you think, where do I start? And there is no answer to that other than you just start, because the moment you begin starting, you get in the flow. As soon as you get into that flow state, then you can create, you'll surprise yourself completely. So just do it is what I would advise.
That is the best advice I've ever heard. That's amazing.
Really. Yeah, I need to watch this back and then take that advice as well.
And one last question for you, which is, what's next for Jack? Forget about the 1914 for a minute, although this question might tie in with it. What's next for you? You've achieved a lot. You know, some people come into magic and dream of releasing their own project. You've done that. Some people dream of working with a production company. You set your own production company up, you know, that's doing remarkably well. You've mastered the art of video production. You've worked all over the world. You've been an actor. You've done so much. Is there anything left on your bucket list, whether it's a magical bucket list or a normal bucket list? Is there anything that's specific that you wanted to achieve with 1914? What does the future hold for Jack Curtis? What are you wanting to do? Is there anything specific goals that you're wanting to hit?
Yeah, I'd say three things. Two of them are in the magic bucket list. One of them is in the normal bucket list. So the two things on the magic bucket list would be to grow the 1914, because we're still very young. And so to see that grow would be a dream, and there's nothing stopping us. So that's number one, to grow the 1914 bigger, because we've still got a relatively small audience, you know, compared to the big guys. So it'd be nice to be able to grow those numbers and be able to compete, you know, a little bit more with the big guys. So that's one. That's on the magic bucket list, and kind of the normal bucket list as well. One that's definitely on the magic bucket list for me would be to do another stage show. I would love to do one of those at some point within the next 5 to 10 years. Giving myself a big window there. Don't want to put too much strain on myself. And the biggest one for me personally is to finish writing. I've got a couple of feature length films, you know, cinema length films that I want to finish writing and get made. So they're the three in answer to your question.
Wow, that's some great goals. Which sparks one other question.
Okay,
when you do those film scripts, let's say that they get bought and they're hugely successful, and people come knocking on your door and go, can you write my script? Can you write my script? Can you write, which could happen. You know the industry. Would you still have time for the 1914?
Yes. Yeah, I think so. Because 1914 is fun. 1914 is fun. And as well, writing somebody else's script for somebody else. Yeah, I'm not as keen on if someone says, "Oh, can you write this for me?" Like a commission, they're not as fun for me as ones that are passion projects in myself that I want to write. A story that's bursting out of me. That's a story that's bursting out of somebody else, being told through me, which is okay. But the ones that I'm passionate about are the stories that are bursting out of me that I personally want to tell. So yeah, I think I'll always have time for the 1914 for sure.
Good. I was a bit worried there for a minute. That's good. Right. That's made me happy. Brilliant. You know what, Jack? This has been an incredible interview. It really has. It's really great to actually hear from somebody from the 1914, from behind the scenes, and just hear how you guys approach everything that you do. And also to hear about your career, because you've done so much and you are making such a big impact in the industry. And I really hope that a lot of the other companies, they kind of pull themselves up to your level in terms of production value and so on and so forth. That'd be the dream goal. And I think that, you know, with you guys leading the way, I think it's definitely going to happen. So thank you so much. Now, if people want to check you out on social media, is it best to follow you on, to follow the 1914? I've been told by D you're not a big Instagram person.
Basically, I came off all social media about 4 years ago. And then I have an Instagram account, which I use infrequently. Like I just have so much stuff to do. And so I can't be doing with being pinged all the time by social media. So I do have an Instagram account, yes, and you can follow me on there. I just don't have it on my phone. So it's more sporadic. But yeah, please do follow me on there. So the handle is Mr. Jack Citrus. Mr. Jack Curtis was not available, so I went for an anagram. So it's Mr. Jack Citrus, or one word, or yeah, probably better, the 1914, which is at the 1914 Magic on Instagram, or the 1914 on everything else, I believe.
I'll put links to those down below. And one final question: your art of series that we've talked about in great detail. Can I ask to finish off? We're talking about Instagram. When are you going to get Lewis to do the art of posing on Instagram? Is that going to be a project that's coming out at some point?
Yes, it is. It's finished. It's ready to go out. It'll be out next week. Keep your eyes out for that.
I absolutely love that. I'd love to see that. I'd love to see a trailer for that. I really would. Jack, it's been absolutely incredible. Thank you very much for everything that you do. I really appreciate you taking the time to jump on the channel. Thank you so much.
That's all right. You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
No problem. Guys, do me a favor. Leave a comment down below. I'm sure Jack will see it, or somebody from the 1914 will. So make sure you leave a comment down below, and please check out the 1914. Check out the reviews that I've done on their products. They bring out some incredible stuff. So make sure you follow them on social media and you'll be kept up to date with all of their new products. And yeah, I'm going to be back again tomorrow with another 3 videos. So Jack, one more time, thanks very much.
No worries. Cheers, Craig.
Take care. Bye, everyone.
Thanks for listening to the Talk Magic Podcast.
Magic.
Be sure to like and subscribe to the Magic TV YouTube channel.
Magic TV.
Which includes 14 unique videos every week. Whatever type of magic you're interested in, we've got you covered. Just search YouTube for Craig Petty's Magic TV, or click on the link in the description from this podcast below. Be sure to join us next Friday at 5 p.m. right here for another Talk Magic Podcast.